Health Empowerment News Summary, Episode 1. Hello, everybody. My name is Andrew McGivern, and I'm the co-host of the new Health Empowerment News podcast found at www.foodsarenotdrugs.com. What you're listening to now is a summary episode of the first Health Empowerment News podcast. For those of you listening to this feed, which is the old radio show, Health Empowerment with Croft Woodruff, you're very familiar with Croft and his encyclopedia-like knowledge of natural health and alternative medicine. And for those of you who are new to this show, I encourage you to listen to all the episodes. And for the longtime listeners, we appreciate your listenership. In the first episode of Health Empowerment News, we talked about what the ancients knew that modern medicine forgot. The ancient techniques of dealing with sickness in our body that were pushed aside and forgotten as we embarked on a new era of synthetic chemical medicine. Some of these treatments and some of these methods are still valid today. And we're going to talk about that in the first episode of Health Empowerment News. So let's get into the first episode, and we're going to talk a little bit about what the ancients knew that modern medicine forgot. You were also the co-founder of the Health Action Network.
That's true.
How did you get started with the Health Action Network?
Well, again, there was a group of us that realized that we needed an organization that would put on lectures, public lectures, that independent of the natural health products industry or the Canadian Health Food Association or similar organizations, which are strictly in the business of doing business. We wanted a consumer health group, a consumer-oriented group that would keep people alert as to what is going on in the natural health products industry, what's going on in natural health care, whether it's to do with naturopaths or medical doctors, things like chelation therapy, alternative cancer therapies that are available now in Canada and the United States, and where before you had to leave the country to go to Mexico or else to some place in Europe to get treatments that some of them are available now. And of course, there has been an ongoing attack against alternative medicine. And of course, the theme of this is what the ancients knew and what modern medicine forgot. Well, maybe the Inuit people or the people of the Haida or other tribes here in British Columbia or other Aboriginal people across Canada, the Cree or whatever or whomever, they knew how to deal with fever. That's why they had a sweat lodge, or they used the hot springs where they were available. In the case of the Scandinavians, and that would be the Laplanders as well, and the people all across the Arctic Circle in Siberia and Alaska, they knew about these things, sweat lodges, steam baths, or hot springs to deal with fever.
Well, there you have it, the first segment of the Health Empowerment News Summary Podcast. And remember, if you want to catch the entire episode and listen to it completely, you can go to www.foodsarenotdrugs.com. Click on Podcasts. It's under Health Empowerment News. But of course, we couldn't forget, I mean, it's in the news, H1N1, the swine flu. Is history repeating itself? Back in 1976, we sort of went through the same thing, and it seems to be that history is repeating itself. And I'll let Croft take it from here.
And how many people remember, and of course there's a lot of people that wouldn't remember because this happened before they were born, but way back in 1976, there was a threatened pandemic. A couple of soldiers came down with what was considered to be swine flu. One of them died. Of course, they overlooked the fact that he just came off a very arduous route march and training exercise, and he probably died from exhaustion more than anything else. But it just so happened it was an election year for the selected president, Gerald Ford, who was appointed president, succeeding the disgraced and resigned Richard Nixon. And what a good political issue to have. we're going to save you from this terrible swine flu that's brought down our Marines over at Fort Detrick or wherever it was on the eastern seaboard. And so the Centers for Disease Control, they cranked up. And in the meantime, there was a gentleman by the name of John Anthony Morris. He was the chief microbiologist of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, an expert in virus and viral disease. And he said, there isn't going to be a pandemic. And if there was, the vaccine they have developed wouldn't stop it anyways, and in fact would do more harm than good. For his efforts, he was fired, and his laboratory was dismantled. Ongoing experiments were smashed, and that was the end of that for him. But by the time they had 10 million people having received the shot, they had 1 million adverse reactions, and they had some of them very serious. I forget, thousands suffered from paralytic polio. If you search on the net, there is a 60-minute segment available. I don't have the URL before me.
So I'll post the URL in the show notes.
Excellent. And Mike Wallace, interviewing one of the victims of the vaccine itself. And of course, if you ask anybody who is administering these vaccines, let me have a look at the manufacturer's declaration regarding the ingredients, as well as the possible side effects. Invariably, you'll find that Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a form of paralytic polio, is one of the possible side effects of these vaccines. And of course, that is what happened with the swine flu vaccine of 1976. And I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts that there may well be problems with this vaccine that they're rushing now. How can they tell in a matter of 4 months, if even that, that a vaccine is going to be effective, never mind safe, because you can have an adverse reaction to a vaccine only a matter of a few months after the shot. Some people react right away. A lot of infants have died from the shock of a vaccine.
So are you saying you're going to abstain from the vaccine, Carl? Well, I'm pretty sure you know the answer to that question, but if you want to know for sure, head on over to www.foodsarenotdrugs.com and click on podcasts. And now for the third segment of the Health Empowerment News Podcast, where Croft talks a little bit more about vaccine safety.
But we have people in government right now in the health bureaucracy that deny that vaccines cause any problem. And a child practically has to drop dead in the doctor's office before they will recognize that the vaccine may have caused that. That's how bad it is. And of course, one of the most outspoken people is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of the assassinated Bobby Kennedy, who was, of course, President JFK's attorney general. And he has spoken out about the damage that vaccines are doing in the United States, where they are compulsory. And by the way, you cannot get liability insurance if you are a vaccine manufacturer. They are so safe, you can't get liability insurance. I mean, if something is as safe as they claim it is, then they should have no trouble offering you liability insurance in case the vaccine should injure you or, worse, kill you. But they can't do that. And in fact, by 1987... there was so much damage done by the vaccine programs, because they really had promoted them and made them compulsory, that there was only three vaccine manufacturers left, one of them being Merck. And they told the then Secretary of Health that they were going to shut down because the damages that they were paying out were getting to the point where there was no profit in manufacturing vaccines. So Congress in 1987, besides making vaccinations mandatory, they also passed a law that the U.S. government would assume liability, and they instituted a Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, the VAERS program. And since 1987, when that program was instituted, they have paid out almost $3 billion in damages, and that only represents 10% of the claims. And, of course, under the Bush administration, they passed legislation which even though they were exempt before from liability, they're even further exempt, whether it's the anthrax vaccine that they're trying to foist on people, and of course these other vaccines that they've been coming down with. The bottom line is that if something is so safe, then the liability should be solid on it, so that put your money where your mouth is. But they don't do that. And of course, doctors don't speak out against it because the College of Physicians and Surgeons, their medical licensing board, will take away their license to practice and put them out of business. So they just offer the vaccine, and if you refuse, they don't push it.
And next we get to hear Croft's theory on where could these avian flu, the bird flu viruses, be coming from. Interesting theory. And a little bit more on what the ancients knew that modern medicine forgot.
I mean, where else are you? Just like the flu vaccine, we talk about bird flu, for instance. We talk about it. Well, public health talks about bird flu, and they've been talking about a great bird flu pandemic, you know, which hasn't manifested it yet. It's supposed to be from wild birds. But where do they incubate the annual flu shots? In birds' eggs, chicken or duck egg or embryo. Where else are you going to find bird viruses but in duck egg or chicken egg and the embryo of those birds? I mean, it's absurd. And because of this stupidity, their filtration isn't that great that they can catch all these viruses. I mean, when you consider what we hear about what HIV can do, you know, these viruses are pretty clever. And I think they need to be a lot more careful with what they're doing in terms of vaccinology. And then, of course, I have a real issue because we were talking about how the Aboriginal people of all continents used the old technique of feeding a fever, that is, keeping the patient warm and well hydrated and well nourished, a cold compress over the forehead and at the back of the head to prevent convulsions, and that's how they would deal with a fever. That's what many of the old shaman of times past and the herbalists, they all knew this. And of course, the trouble was is in the 15th and 16th century, they were burnt at the stake or hung or drawn and quartered and so on for witchcraft. Because their competitors, namely the alchemists and the surgeons, didn't like the competition. And it hasn't changed much today.
And of course, don't forget, everybody, that you can listen to the entire episode at www.foodsarenotdrugs.com. And in the next segment, we get to find out what Croft feels is the body's natural response to a virus and how the body can kill a virus infection on its own and how you can help. And once again, we'll let Croft take it from here.
So the fever is the body's natural defense against
that
the virus.
That is how the body kills viruses. It's very hard to find this information out there in the scientific, but I mean, I contacted a microbiologist who's a medical doctor working on viruses and also on HIV. And I asked him, well, how is it? Why do we have fevers? I mean, I knew the answer already. Because viruses can't replicate at body temperatures in excess of, 102 degrees Fahrenheit and about, 98 or 98.5 degrees Celsius. They cannot replicate. And that's how the body gets rid of viruses. You have neutrophil phagocytes. You have other cells that go around dealing with injury, with infection, whether it's germs, whether it's fungus, whether it is some viruses, and so on. But viruses, when they replicate in the cell, they are able to hide because in destroying the nucleus of the cell, they take the protein coating, part of it, and coat themselves. And, of course, your immune cells are fooled because of this protein coating is part of them. And so they ignore it. But the point is when the virus infection gets to what you'd call a critical mass, the body recognizes it and it starts producing these different interleukin and this sort of thing. And that's how the body will bring on a fever. And of course, some people will go through a fever and get over it. Others need to be really taken care of. Unfortunately, if you use a fever-suppressing drug like Tamiflu, and we've seen deaths of 50 children or our juveniles in Japan a few years ago who were treated with Tamiflu, I think that would be the worst thing you can do. And, of course, Relenza is its inhalant version. And I would certainly would urge anybody to stay away from something like that. Aspirin, they in fact warn you not to use aspirin to treat a fever in a child because it can cause Reye syndrome.
I hope you're enjoying the summary episode of the Health Empowerment News Podcast. You can find the entire episode at www.foodsarenotdrugs.com. And in the final segment of this episode, Croft is talking about Dr. Jonathan Wright, a medical doctor who uses natural methodologies and prescribes natural health products in his practice along with prescription medications. He is an integrative physician. He also has a very informative natural health newsletter called Nutrition and Healing. A number of years ago, he had a major run-in with the Food and Drug Administration in the United States. His clinic was raided. And I'll let Croft tell the rest of the story.
And of course, he has a newsletter, and his clinic is doing great work. And of course, he's a classic example of how Big Brother, big government, is trying to shut you down because Big Pharma doesn't like what you're doing.
Well, he was raided by the FDA.
He was raided by the FDA. Imagine, here's a doctor and his colleagues running a clinic. They've got people in the clinic receiving various forms of treatment, and in comes, the doors are kicked in. All they had to do was knock on the door and to be let in. Sheriff's deputies and FDA agents wearing flak jackets and carrying guns, brandishing them, terrorizing the patients and seizing everything. You know, and of course, the end result is that the FDA agreed that it was wrong, and Dr. Wright agreed that he'd drop the liability suit that he had against them, because they didn't like what the publicity would be when it was coming out in the suit. It was pretty rotten, and so he's been left alone pretty well. But other doctors since then have suffered similar fate, and of course we've seen this happen here in I believe in Kelowna recently, and of course we've seen it happen in the Prairies and in Ontario and Quebec. So.
Well, that's it for the Health Empowerment News Summary episode. There may be more in the future, but if you want to listen to the episode in its entirety and the other 5 episodes so far, this is a weekly podcast, so we're going to have a podcast approximately every week on the Health Empowerment News feed, which can be found at www.foodsarenotdrugs.com. Make sure you subscribe. Click on the iTunes button to subscribe in iTunes, or the Zoom button if you use Zoom. You can also subscribe using your favorite RSS reader. I hope you enjoyed the show, and stay tuned for more Health Empowerment News podcast summary episodes in the future.